This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The Maryland legislature is considering a bill that would hide certain court records from public view. It's called the Maryland Second Chance Act of 2014, and it would shield convictions for 10 nonviolent misdemeanors, including disorderly conduct, possession of a controlled dangerous substance, and prostitution. The legislature has considered a shielding bill every year since 2010. Last year, the House passed a bill, but it died in the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee. Joining me now to talk about this is Karen York. She's the policy associate for the nonprofit Job Opportunities Task Force, which is backing the bill. Karen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sheila. It's my pleasure.
We're also joined by Daryl McCallum. He's an attorney with Shaw and Rosenthal, and he represents business owners in labor law and employment issues. He's also a member of the Maryland Chamber of Commerce, which opposes this bill. Daryl, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Karen York, how would this work? I mean, what convictions are included in the legislation, and what would an individual have to do to shield a conviction?
Right. So you mentioned a couple of the convictions that would be eligible for shielding, disturbing the peace, simple possession of CDS, disorderly conduct, controlled dangerous substance, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if an individual was convicted of disorderly conduct and they were sentenced to no jail time, but maybe 2 years probation, mm-hmm. right? After that individual has satisfied any mandatory supervision to the state, that individual would have to wait an additional 3 years of being crime-free, ultimately. And then after that three-year period, that individual would then petition the courts to request the shielding of their records. When the district court receives that petition, the state's attorney is served with a copy of that petition, and it would be there would be an opportunity for any victim or a victim's representative to provide any relevant information if they wanted to object the petition.
The state's attorney would contact the victim?
No, the courts would contact whatever victim that was on the court file mm-hmm. for that particular case. The individual would have 30 days to respond. And if the individual does not object to the petition, and if the state's attorney does not object to the petition, then the petition is granted.
But if they do object?
If they do object, then a hearing is called, and then a judge will listen to all relevant information from the state's attorneys and any victims that are on file, and the judge would be the one who would ultimately make a decision as to whether or not the individual's petition would be granted.
Daryl McCallum, what are your concerns about this legislation?
What's being proposed here is something that would take away from most businesses the ability to consider very relevant information in determining who they would hire. When you look at the list of offenses that is listed here, you have crimes of conduct, things like disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, which would deal with, say, someone's propensity for violence. You have crimes of honesty, things like theft. And you have crimes of moral turpitude, things like drug offenses, use of drug paraphernalia, or prostitution, something of that nature. And when you think about hiring decisions and thinking about who you're going to hire, things like honesty, moral turpitude, and propensity for violence are very relevant considerations that any employer would take into account in deciding who they want to hire. The fact is that anybody who's applying for a job, you're going to put on your resume all the good things that make you a qualified person for a job. Well, you're not going to put on your resume, obviously, things that would be considered to be anything that you've done that are wrong. So there's no way that if this were to pass and an employer would not be able to look into these things, there's no way that the employer would be able to balance out the good things you're saying with some of the bad things that you may have done. Not saying that these things, a conviction in the past should be an absolute bar to employment, and of course that has been held to be illegal by several courts, but the fact is that people's past in terms of the things that they may have done that they've been convicted for, we're talking about convictions now, not arrests, are relevant considerations in determining who you would want to hire.
Let me just, a point of clarification, you used the phrase propensity for violence. This list of 10 is nonviolent crimes, mm-hmm. right?
Right. They would be lesser offenses, I think. But things like disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, would determine whether or not someone's you know, conduct is such that you would want to hire them. So, yes, I understand that they would be not of the type of offenses that would be as grave as some of the more violent offenses. But I'm just saying that the types of things here are certain things that you would want to take into account when you're considering who you would want to hire.
I wonder whether what's really going on is this bill, as I pointed out, has been before the legislature for several years now and not being passed by both houses. Is what's really at issue, Karen, whether employers use a conviction as a screening tool to just not deal with people who have had a prior conviction?
Yes, Shelley, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, we find all over the state and all over the country, as you can tell from a lot of these national conversations around the collateral consequence of a criminal conviction, we're finding that it's difficult for anyone to get a job out here nowadays, right? So now an individual who has to check a box stating that they've been arrested or convicted, or an individual that once they've, you know, gotten far enough in the hiring process where they've gotten far enough on their merits, and now that background check has ran and that stops the process altogether. That employer is no longer interested in that individual because that individual has an arrest or a conviction. And let's be clear, it's not just that employers are discriminating against individuals because they have a conviction. It's if they just have a hit, period.
Is that a fair description, that it's used as a screening tool by some employers?
I don't think it's a fair description in the sense that I'm not saying that it would never happen, but there is also recourse already in the law under the disparate impact provisions of Title VII that employees can bring, or that the EEOC brings all the time, these types of lawsuits when there is a blanket rule that prohibits people who have had convictions from being considered for employment. There's been case law in the past. There are three factors called the green factors after a case called Green v. Missouri Pacific Railroad, basically taking into account the nature and gravity of an offense, the time that's been passed since the offense was committed, and the nature of the position in question, that when an employer takes those things into consideration in making a hiring decision, an individualized hiring decision, and if they decide to use the conviction, has questions about it, and that they give the employee a chance to explain, here's what happened, so that they can make a full assessment based on all of these factors as to whether or not the person should be hired or not.
These convictions are not shielded from everyone's view under this legislation. Who could still obtain access to the conviction?
With shielding would only restrict access to those individuals who are considered the general public. So all law enforcement, the courts would have full access. There are also safeguards in place to ensure that certain employers that have a statutory or contractual requirement to access this information would be able to maintain access to shielded records. In addition to those entities under Maryland's Family Law Article that either service children or access vulnerable populations, they would be able to access shielded records. So it's not like, you know, the information would, you know, just completely be erased and no one would have access.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Karen York, Policy Associate with the Job Opportunities Task Force, and Daryl McCallum, a labor law and employment attorney. We're talking about a bill in the legislature that would shield 10 nonviolent misdemeanors from the view of the public. Karen, how were the waiting periods arrived at that are in this law?
The first reason was we looked at what other states had done, you know, other policies that states have implemented. The general waiting period that a lot of states adopted was this idea of having to wait 3 to 5 years, or, you know, 3 to 7 years before being able to petition to have your record sealed, shielded, or expunged. The second reason why we came up with the 3 to 5 year waiting period was back in 2009, there was a study commissioned by the National Institute for Justice, and this it looked at over 100,000 criminal records in New York. And it found that it was an actuarial estimate to show that after an individual has, you know, done the crime and done their time, after a certain period of time, if they remain clean for 5 years, no more than 5 years, if they're able to stay clean for 5 years, then they are no more likely to reoffend, or they're no more likely to reoffend than an individual who had never offended.
Are there any changes in the version of the bill that's before the legislature or before the Senate right now, the Senate committee, which is holding a hearing on Tuesday, as I understand it? Any changes in the law, the proposal this year compared to last year, that make it either more acceptable or less acceptable to business interests, Daryl?
I think that one of the things that may have changed was the issue of the age that a person was when they originally committed the crime. I think last year it was like 26 that was in the law, and said that if you had committed the crime before then, that it could be not shielded, but after then it wouldn't.
And this year's version has no age.
Yes, it has no age, and I can understand. I mean, there's some arbitrariness I can understand to that particular age limit in terms of what the bill and putting that in the bill, and I'm sure that's why it was taken out. I think the idea, though, of the bill itself, I mean, in terms of the drafting of it, I think it's more of the issue of the employer being allowed to take into consideration the factors, relevant factors, that any employer would want to look at in terms of assessing whether or not a person is fit for a job. What this bill doesn't do is it doesn't give the employer, again, based on the position that the person is going to be in, the opportunity to make the individualized assessment as to whether some of these offenses, even if they might be nonviolent offenses, the offenses themselves would be relevant to determining whether or not that person is particularly fit for the job.
We have to wrap this up. Karen, you've been lobbying for this. Is there any difference that you see in Annapolis and how this bill is being received than last year?
Yes. This year, there's a lot of interest in this idea. Legislators are getting calls about this idea of, you know, I have this record, I have this conviction, and I have not been able to secure employment. I've not been able to secure housing. I haven't even been able to get an interview. And, you know, I mentioned earlier this national conversation around this idea of the collateral consequence of a criminal conviction. You know, it's nothing new. It's nothing, you know, that fell out of the sky. I think everyone knows the stigma that's associated with a record, this whole idea of once a criminal, always a criminal, and the fact that it's held against you. It's widely known by criminologists and practitioners and workforce advocates and policymakers that the very thing that individuals need who have a record, the very thing they need is employment. And if you are using that blemish that they have on their record to deny them the very thing that they need to be successful, then we can't position ourselves to question, you know, why they aren't successful, right? You know,
we have to leave it there. I really appreciate you both talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen York is Policy Associate with the Job Opportunities Task Force. Daryl McCallum is a labor law and employment attorney with the firm Shaw and Rosenthal. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. The Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee has scheduled a hearing on this bill for Tuesday. I'm Sheila Cass. Just ahead, calculating the dollar impact of health disparities. Stay with us on 88.1.